Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. In the past 2 weeks, California Governor Jerry Brown signed a slew of bills into state law. The newly signed legislation includes a requirement for ride-sharing businesses like Uber and Lyft to better monitor the records of their drivers, and a ban on smokeless tobacco at professional baseball games. Governor Brown also signed into law Bill AB 30, which requires public schools to phase out the use of the racially derogatory name Redskins for their school mascots by 2017. The state legislation will also provide financial support for the costs of new uniforms and mascot gear to the 4 schools in the state that still use the stereotype as their mascot. On today's episode of The Spot, I'm dedicating the full half hour to the stories of 2 other American high schools and their journeys to remove Redskins mascots from their campuses, as told on the podcast Scene on Radio. That's Scene spelled S-C-E-N-E. The folks producing Scene on Radio are experienced audio documentarians and instructors based at the Center of Documentary Studies at Duke University. They launched the show with a series looking at sports and identity in American life. And in this episode, they leave Duke's campus and head out to hear the conflicts that come when a school tries to expel its mascot.
Hi, how are you?
We're walking on Frenchman.
Scene
on. 6:15 in the morning and we're going to work out.
Let me do that again.
Scene.
S.
S.
C. E.
Scene.
Scene on radio.
Yeah. Everything all right?
Scene on radio.
In my mind's eye right now, I'm picturing one of those graphics like you see on newspaper websites. There's a map of the U.S. with shaded blobs all over it, different sizes, shapes, and colors. Each blob represents the geographic area of a fan base. You know, Red Sox Nation covering much of New England. Some roughly match the boundaries of a state, showing where people live and die with the Indiana Hoosiers, for instance. There are thousands of tiny blobs for high schools covering one suburb or a small town or just a piece of a city where people root for the local Falcons or Wildcats. Here in North Carolina, we're famous for 2 overlapping blobs in different shades of blue for the arch rivals Duke and UNC. One day we went to record at a Duke University rec center, and I was talking to this guy who was there to play in the noontime pickup basketball games.
Well, I'm Randy Jackson. I work for the Duke Police Department here on campus.
Yes, Randy is a fan.
College basketball, Duke University.
Being a Duke fan usually means you want the North Carolina Tar Heels to lose, whether they're playing Duke or not.
I despise the Tar Heels. Even though I have met Tar Heels along the way here and there at barbershops, and they're nice guys, but they're still Tar. At the end of the day, I'm rooting against them.
So where would you draw the line? Could you imagine, could you marry a Tar Heel?
There would have to be a lot of pluses in a lot of other areas. There would have to be a lot of pluses, because that... somebody's not going to be happy at the end of the day. And I can pretty much rub it in with the best of them.
Hello, it's Scene on Radio. I'm John Bewin. Here in episode 3, more of our series we call Contested, stories about the role of sports in our collective life, sports stories that are also about other things. This thing we do, if we're sports fans, this business of aligning ourselves with teams, it's absurd, of course. The fact that I feel slightly better about myself, I walk a little taller, the world is just a little more right, because my team won a game. A team with no connection to me except that it plays half its games in the place where I grew up or whatever. It's irrational, presumably springs from some deep us versus them tribal impulse. But our teams come with colors and nicknames, and it's all in good fun, right? That word I just used for sports fandom, tribal, takes on an extra twist or irony when you're talking about teams with names like the Indians, Braves, Redskins. So yes, there's that football team in our nation's capital where the owner holds firm, unmoved by critics that include Native American organizations. Meanwhile, some high schools across the country who called their teams the R-word have retired the name in recent years, but about 60 high schools in 25 states still use the name. In this episode, two towns on opposite ends of the country that recently confronted the mascot question with different results. First, we go to Driggs, Idaho, home of Teton High School. It sits in a valley just west of the Grand Tetons. And yes, the residents of Teton Valley are mostly white.
The first time that I heard the superintendent wanted to change the name, I thought, can he really do that? Can he break, you know, a 100-year-old tradition?
It was kind of a surprise. I mean, all of a sudden it came out that it was going to be changed.
I had no idea that we would have the kind of community outcry that we had.
So this is our JV girls basketball team playing Snake River.
How are you, Mr. Kersley?
Good.
I'm Monty Wolstenhume. I'm the superintendent in our school district. My family is six generations to this community. So this is the main foyer. So you can see the name and the mascot emblem there. It's got the name Teton High School, home of the Redskins, and then a nice tile picture of a Native American chief emblemed on it. You know, the decision that I made to change the high school mascot had been something I'd been thinking about since I took the position of superintendent, but I'd never really articulated it or had a discussion with anybody else. I'd been thinking about the perception of our high school. So everywhere your sports team goes, that's kind of what you're known as, and you hear it over the announcers, speaker at the games. It's covered in the media and the newspapers. Even though there's a perception of people of, yeah, it's okay, it's traditional, it's not a big deal, the dictionary defines it as a racial slur.
Actually, I believe it was at a school board meeting. The superintendent brought up the suggestion and the idea. My name is Bonnie Etchemendi, and I am a parent in Teton Valley, Idaho, as well as a trustee on our local school board. There was another school board member as well as myself that was, we both shared the idea that it was an exciting change that could take place.
My name is Scott Anderson, and I'm the publisher of the Teton Valley News. I heard when he went to the meeting and proclaimed it, and we were all like, well, this is going to be a big story for our front page. That was our only story. There was a full front page just for that. So our headline said, Redskin Pride or Prejudice, because that was the whole issue was, you know, what do you think about it?
Hello, come on in.
My name is Greg Rammel, and I'm a plumbing contractor. I graduated from high school in 1998, and I played all sorts of sports. I was a football captain. We'd said the name Redskin proudly, you know, thousands of times my whole life, and suddenly be told that we were being racist was kind of caught me off guard.
I mean, my grandma was a Teton Redskin. My name is Nathan Penfold, and I'm a potato farmer. You know, that's like saying, well, I'm going to take Penfold away from your last name. Because that's what it represents to me, is a family, this valley family that we have, and it joins us all together. And that's the name, the Teton Redskins.
So even though I anticipated some pushback and some upset people because it's a tradition in our community, I felt like it was the right thing to do to show respect to the people it was referring to. We reached out to the tribes in Idaho, and we have a letter from the Nez Perce tribe in northern Idaho and the Shoshone-Bannock tribe at Fort Hall.
When Monty contacted us, I arranged a meeting with our Fort Hall business council leaders, and we had a really good discussion on the name change. My name is Randy L. Teton. I am the public affairs manager for the Shoshone-Bannock tribes. Yeah, we provided a letter of support after we met with Monty, stating that we as the formal tribal nation residing in this territory were in support of changing the name, and that the fact that the name Redskin is derogatory, and we are very hopeful.
When I made the decision and presented that to the school board in June, over the next 4 weeks, there was so much angst and anxiety and conflict that I should have recognized, and I neglected it at that time.
And I had a lot of phone calls, and you know, from very upset parents and grandparents.
I mean, calls, petitions. I myself got a lot of calls of like, what do you think of this? This can't happen. You gotta stop him from changing the name. It's like, whoa, it's up to him. We're here to report the news.
Then when we had the July meeting, there was the whole crowd.
You're watching Local News 8 at 10.
It's been a month since the Teton County School Superintendent announced he'd be doing away with the high school's Redskin mascot.
Well, last night he opened up the school board meeting for public comment, and he got some. Local News 8's Jamie Ostroff was there. Jamie, how did it go?
Just to give you an idea of what it was like in that meeting, people were given an hour and 20 minutes to comment. They went on for 3 hours.
I think he needs a damn good spanking.
That seemed to be the popular opinion.
Well, it was very different than any school board meeting I've ever been to. Our typical school board meeting probably has anywhere from 5 to 10 community members, parents.
You know, we probably had 100, 120 people show up, 60 to 70 actually get up and share their remarks, 15 or 20 to 1 people who were opposed to the change.
It's a little intimidating sitting down there in the front.
So at the end of all the public comments, I stood just kind of in some brief closing remarks and told everyone, thank you for being here. I'm so grateful that you care about this high school and our school district and our community and what's going on, that you would take time to leave home to come and share your opinion. So I really...
The superintendent realized at that point that we had a huge community issue with regard to how, first of all, we had gone about addressing the possibility of making that change. And so he basically said, we will step back and revisit this in the future.
It's tabled. At this time, we're not spending funds to make a change. When the board chooses to bring it up again, they will choose to bring it up again, and we'll see how we choose to move forward. I haven't changed my mind on the issue. I still believe it's the right thing to do. But I recognize that I made a mistake and I need to listen to people. It vividly showed me how passionate people are about our school and our community. And I love and respect that about everybody that spoke up. I wish they cared that much about our budget hearings, when we're hiring teachers, looking at academic standards. To me, the really big, really important things that we're doing as a school district, very few people show up for. But this one, tied to the mascot and its affiliation with the high school and athletics, got a huge emotional response.
I think it speaks volumes, and I think it's not unusual. Our community is nowhere different than any other community. You know, sports is a huge part of it.
So the athletes of Teton High School remain the Redskins for now. People have suggested a compromise: keep the name, but change the mascot to a potato. No sign of momentum behind that idea. Around the same time that Superintendent Wolstenhume made his unsuccessful try in the Rocky Mountains, the question bubbled up in another little town 2,000 miles east. Cooperstown, New York, site of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and more relevant to our story, the home of James Fenimore Cooper, the guy who wrote The Last of the Mohicans and the other leather stocking novels in the 19th century.
Well, he lived here more than half his life. He wrote more than half his books here in Cooperstown, of his 32 novels. He even wrote a novel that was called The Redskins in 1845.
Hugh MacDougall is the town historian. He thinks it's mainly because of Cooper's novels that the town chose the nickname for its high school teams.
The earliest use of it that I can find in the press is from 1937, when there was a headline saying, Redskins open Cooperstown High School season here Saturday.
The high school coach in those days was a much-loved man called Red Bursey. So some people in town think Redskins was at least partly a reference to the coach. In any case, there was occasional debate over the years whether to change the name out of sensitivity to Native Americans. In the 1980s, in the 2000s, but the name survived. When the question came up again 2 or 3 years ago, it started quietly, with one student, and then another.
I'm Emily Greenberg. I'm 18, potentially studying English at Columbia University. I've lived in Cooperstown since I think I was 2 years old, so my identity was not necessarily an athlete, but I did do cross-country for 3 years in high school, and I did track and field hockey in middle school. I wasn't thinking about Redskins as a bad thing. I mean, I knew it was wrong, but it wasn't something I really wanted to change until I went to this summer camp program in Exeter, New Hampshire, and I had these really great friends, and two of them, Izzy and Kennard, were from the Navajo Reservation in Arizona. And one day we were just sitting around talking. I think we were under one of these oaks on, like, the grass. We were talking about our schools and our school sports teams, and the conversation sort of rolled around to mascots. And I remember Kennard asking, "Emily, what's your mascot?" And I had to say the Redskins. He said something along the lines of, you know that's derogatory, or you know that's wrong. And I was like, yeah. And it really hit me then that it wasn't just this name. It actually hurt someone. And I think that's when it sort of came into my mind that, whoa, that's just not okay. It took a while until I actually took any action. 11th grade, and a friend of mine, Hope Doner, we were setting up for homecoming, and as part of the student council, we had to put up all the signs and decorations and stuff, and there was this one tarp that had Redskins written across it, and we were working on hanging it up, and I just sort of commented, gosh, this is awful, I can't believe we're still the Redskins, and told that story about meeting my friends, and Hope agreed with me. I was like, yeah, it's just not cool. And our student government advisor, I think, just sort of mentioned, oh, well, you know, you might want to do something about that. Like, you're not powerless. And yeah, Hope and I did a bunch of research and made an appointment with the superintendent and went to his office. And Dr. Borgstrom, the school board president, was there.
I'd been a bit worried about it. I'm David Borgstrom. I'm the president of the Cooperstown Central School Board of Education. We had made a push for cultural sensitivity and had brought a lot of educational components into the school. But I was worried whether and if and when someone would come forward and raise the question, how can we promote cultural sensitivity and diversity at the same time have this mascot? And I thought they were right, and I really had a hard time arguing any of the logic they had brought forward. And so at that time, I made the decision that I thought this was something that the board needed to address. I thought it was a board decision, but I also made the conscious decision to not let the girls who came forward come out publicly with who they were, because I thought there would be an awful lot of backlash and pushback from students, faculty, and people in the town, and there was.
I think most of us heard about it when their children, or in my case, my grandchildren, came home and said, oh, we had a thing in the auditorium where they came down and spoke to us about changing the name, what the name is, and it's derogatory and everything. Jim Tallman, I'm retired, and I'm the chief of the Cooperstown Fire Department. Our fire department is busy with probably the second busiest in Otsego County. That's a four-wheel drive engine. This is a 2,500-gallon tanker. As somebody that has American Indian heritage in my bloodline, I do not find the word Redskin to be offensive. My great-grandfather, several times removed, his name was Seneca Tall Man, two words. Now it's put together as one word, Tallman. But I never used it towards the fact where we could use it for entitlements or anything. Anytime I filled out an application, I put down I was an American, a white American. We were a high school. We were a sports name. We felt
we were fighting as hard as Redskins. And I think people looking back now are proud of American Indians. They fought very hard. They were very proud people, and we felt we were very proud people.
Yeah, it was a very, very large discussion.
They did hold a public meeting at their regular meeting.
The school board meetings had unprecedented numbers of people coming.
I went down, as did a large number of people from Cooperstown.
The little school cafeteria was full.
And we expressed our concerns.
The arguments, pro and con, were essentially the same in Cooperstown as in Teton Valley, Idaho. People on one side saying, look, if even a fraction of Native Americans feel offended by the name, that's all we need to know. And the other side saying, but wait, that name is important to us. And nobody should take offense because none was ever intended. Again, Cooperstown's official historian, Hugh MacDougall.
I was asked about it, my thoughts, and I expressed them then, as I always have, that although it's not originally a derogatory term, it's obviously considered as such now by many Native Americans, and the decent thing would be to change the name.
In Cooperstown, like in Idaho, school leaders consulted with a nearby American Indian tribe.
Well, I remember I was in my office, and someone had mentioned there was this story about these kids in Cooperstown.
Ray Hallbritter is leader of the Oneida Indian Nation, an hour's drive away. The Oneida's historical lands include Cooperstown.
Well, you know, we've experienced some very severe forms of racism here in upstate New York. There was, in the 70s, my aunt and uncle burned to death in a fire where the local city of Oneida refused to send the fire department. And what the kids at Cooperstown taught us was that there was a new generation of people who are empathetic, who are thoughtful and willing to make tough decisions and take a stand on an issue that is not everyone necessarily agrees with.
I was not a huge fan of the change because of the tradition behind it and how long this school's had it. My name's Jack Donnelly. I'm a senior at Cooperstown High School. I play soccer, basketball, and baseball. Yeah, they brought in a Native American from Oneida, and he came in and just gave a whole presentation about Native Americans, the name itself, and he was very informative. And I remember just sitting there, and it hit me that, all right, I don't want the name anymore if it's hurting people.
Watch the line drive. Look him over, look him over.
2 years later, the Cooperstown High School baseball team takes on a rival in nearby Little Falls, New York.
Okay, boys, come on.
Big hustle there. Let's go, Coop.
Decision time came in early 2013. That's where the Cooperstown story really diverges from that of Teton Valley. Remember, in Idaho, the school superintendent announced the mascot change all on his own, then backed off when much of the community spoke up in opposition. In Cooperstown, the school board took responsibility. It voted 6-1 to do away with Redskins. Then, through a voting process with students, the school chose a new nickname borrowed from the Leatherstocking novels, the Hawkeyes. The Oneida Nation made a $10,000 donation to cover the cost of new uniforms. Some people in Cooperstown are still annoyed by the whole thing, calling it political correctness run amok. But it seems life goes on. Emily Greenberg, who started it all, and the former Redskin who changed his mind, Jack Donnelly.
Traditions are great. Traditions really hold people together and give meaning to events and history. But when it's time to change, it's okay to adopt a new tradition.
There's still some people that don't want it, but more people that think it was the right choice. I'd say only 15 to 20% would be students saying we should have kept Redskins. When we go to other schools and they're announcing our starting lineups, they say the Cooperstown Hawkeyes or the Hawkeyes. In the paper, the Hawkeyes won 8-5, you know. So that's our name now. We're the Hawkeyes and people know it.
Let's get the bats going, guys!
Come on, come on.
By the way, the Oneida Nation and its leader, Ray Hallbritter, are the driving force and the main funder behind Change the Mascot. That's the campaign of ads, surveys, hashtags, and YouTube videos that started in 2013 against the Washington Redskins football team. What moved Hallbritter to launch the campaign that year? The example set by the students of Cooperstown High School. Next time, a different take on sports and identity.
In my second year coaching, my shortstop came in, two athletes. One was my shortstop, one was a point guard in the basketball team. They were dating, and she was very upset and said that the coach said that if she finds out that they're gay, that she'll dismiss them from the team. I'm like, huh? And so, you sure you heard that right?
Stories of gay women athletes, past and present. Thanks to Alexa Dilworth for editing help on this episode. The music on the podcast is by Lucas Bewin and his dad. Our sports series, Contested, is made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Find us online at sceneonradio.org. There you can subscribe and hear all the episodes. We're on Facebook and on Twitter at sceneonradio. Scene on Radio comes from the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University.
I can't recommend Scene on Radio enough. You can find the podcast now on iTunes or check them out at sceneonradio.org. That's S-C-E-N-E on radio.org. And if you're curious what a school board meeting sounds like closer to home, tune into KALW every second and fourth Tuesday at 6 p.m. for the live, unedited broadcast of the San Francisco Unified School District's Board of Education meetings. Yep. We do that here. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. I'd love to hear about the podcasts you've been enjoying lately. Send me your suggestions for future episodes of The Spot to thespot@kalw.org. And tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.